Russian dissident Alexei Navalny has announced that he is ending his hunger strike after 24 days. His doctors told him he was risking his life. CBS News correspondent Charlie Daggett tells us more about the Kremlin opponent who was poisoned last summer and nearly lost his life even then.
When he went to this, what he calls a civilian hospital, it's still a hospital for prisoners, but it's not the prison hospital. They determined, look, his doctors said, private doctors, not his doctors, but civilian physicians said, if you keep this up, there's not going to be much left. And we're talking about a matter of days.
Dmitry talked about the threat Navalny poses to Russia's President Vladimir Putin with Professor Anatol Levin with Georgetown University in Qatar and the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft here in D.C.
Clearly, Putin is worried by Navalny, and he has reason to be. There is a lot of anger in Russian society about the corruption of the Putin government and setup. And also, of course, the economy, while not collapsing, is not doing well. And Navalny has been by far the most popular of the opposition leaders against Putin. I mean, not that that's saying a great deal. Putin, you know, retains the support of a majority of Russians, but a much smaller majority than was the case a few years back. And so Putin is, you know, introducing a much more authoritarian system in Russia, including attempting to essentially smash the political opposition by mass arrests and arresting their leader.
You mentioned that Putin has faced critics in opposition before. Is there something different about Navalny?
I think the point is that Navalny is a nationalist. He isn't the liberal that, you know, a lot of people in the West say. He's a very brave man, and I think he's a Democrat in his way. But if you look at his record, he is also a Russian nationalist of his own kind. And most Russians are nationalists. And so he has that patriotic appeal in Russia, which the Russian liberal opposition do not have, because I'm afraid that they are very often seen as being simply tools of America. And coupled with his very strong and very convincing anti-corruption message, that does give him, you know, very considerable popular support.
Does that popular support translate into something more? I mean, could this ever turn into a real threat to Putin?
I think it could. I mean, if not Navalny, then someone else. Because, you know, we've seen over the years a long, long row of leaders who appear to be, you know, very strong, like Putin, but whose base is much more fragile than it appears. And as I say, there is a lot of anger in Russian society about corruption and the outrageous wealth of the Russian elites. I'm not sure that Navalny can manage this, but I think that Putin does have reason to be worried. As far as America is concerned, of course, or the West, we will have to work with whoever is the president of Russia, just as other countries had to work with the president of America, whether his name was Obama, Trump or Biden.
Navalny's supporters, as I'm sure you know, say the U.S. could be doing more than sanctions and expelling diplomats. Any thoughts there? How do you see that?
I don't see how that is the case. The United States has imposed sanctions on Russia for 7 years now with no effect whatsoever. It has, of course, imposed much harsher sanctions on other countries, Cuba, Iran, with no effect whatsoever. If America were to give massive arms to Ukraine, the only effect might be that the Ukrainians would go to war with Russia and lose, and that would create either a war between America and Russia, God forbid, or America having to back away from a partner, which would not be good for America's image. The most important point is Navalny, like other opposition leaders, needs to win the support of a majority of ordinary Russians, not the support of a majority of people in Washington. Imposing sanctions that hurt ordinary Russians simply makes the Russian opposition look like agents of America. That is not a weapon against Putin. That is putting a weapon into Putin's hands.
But I'm reading that the Biden White House has created a new executive order that could target Russian financial systems and sovereign debt. What knowledge do you have of that? And would that create a big problem for Putin?
It would create a problem for Putin, but not, I think, a very big one, simply because Russian sovereign debt is very low. I mean, the one good thing that Putin has done, economically speaking, has been to pay off Russia's debt and build up this enormous reserve fund to deal with precisely such an outcome. But I think that the other thing that threats like this ignore, as with the case of Iran as well, that America and even the West are not the only possibility of raising international finance now. There is China. China is promising to prop up Iran to the tune of $400 billion. China, if Russia seemed to be really sliding down the tubes economically, China is in a position to bail out Russia, which it sees as a very important partner. I'm afraid that, you know, many of these American strategies are based on the idea that we're still back in the 1990s and that America is the only game in town. It isn't.
What is a final thought that you would have that you think is important and worth watching as spring turns into summer?
The most important thing is that, you know, Russia is a threat to Ukraine, obviously. It's a threat to Georgia, because this is part of these post-imperial squabbles that we know so much about from the fall of the British and the French empires. But that does not make it a really serious threat to the United States or to the West. Obviously, America has much bigger priorities elsewhere, and with regard to Russia, I think the goal should be crisis avoidance, not stirring up crisis.
What have you been writing lately, Anatol? Something you'd recommend that our listeners take a look at?
Well, I've been writing a lot on climate change and the Earth Summit because, if I would put in a brief ad, I have a book called Climate Change and the Nation State coming out in paperback later this year. And so I have been working a great deal on climate change policy and how states can mobilize support to take action and can also cooperate together against climate change.
And that is Anatol Levin with Georgetown University in Qatar and the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft here in D.C. He joined us from Doha.